CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO at Vena. Continuous learning is not just a nice to have in finance. It's a necessity. Regulations, financial standards, and technologies are constantly evolving, and finance professionals have to keep up. Joining me today to talk about continuous learning for finance professionals is Brian Lapidus, Director of the FP&A Practice at the Association for Financial Professionals. Brian has 20 years' experience in finance, risk, and operations, and is now committed to the education and advancement of AFP members. Brian, thank you so much for joining me.
Melissa, I'm a fan of the podcast, and thank you for having me on and giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience.
So before I get into some of my questions, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what was it that made you decide to join AFP?
Sure. My background. I was 20 years in the office of the CFO. I've worked at large companies that you've heard of. I've looked at small companies that you haven't heard of. And I've been in different parts of finance. I've been in treasury. I've been in risk. I've run FP&A before. And in that way, I was actually a member of AFP as a practitioner. And at one point, I was looking to make a job transition, and I saw that AFP had a call for articles. I thought, wow, you know, it would be great to kind of have another way to talk about what I know, to share my experiences and contribute to the AFP community instead of just being a reader and an absorber of information. And then over the years, that I really maintained that relationship. I wrote more articles. I taught a class. And I spoke at conference. And after a while, actually, it was when I went to conference. That's when I really was hooked. Just the energy, the excitement, the networking that happens and the conversations all around. I really just bought in at that point. And that's how I ended up on this side of the table where I am today.
What a cool path to get there. For those who may not know a lot or may not yet be members of AFP, can you talk a bit more about what they do?
AFP is a not-for-profit, and we have a very simple mission. We exist for the benefit and the continuing education and career advancement of corporate finance professionals. And we define that as the FP&A world and the treasury world and all of the related positions that are associated with that. And there's really three things I'd say that we do really, really well. One is events, and I mentioned the conference. We have the world's largest conference for our area. We'll have 7,000 people together and 130 educational sessions coming up this fall in Nashville. And then we also have a smaller conference. We have webinars and virtual series. We have a whole gamut of events that we put on, virtual and in person. The second thing we do is certification. We have the only supervised certification for the FP&A space and for Treasury called the FPAC and the CTP. And then the third is continuous education. Through our webinars, classes, guides, articles, membership gives access to some, and then you can be a non-member part of our community and gain access to other parts. But through all of these things, that's how we live our mission, which is to work for the success of the corporate finance practitioner.
So it's so great because clearly what you do ties in so closely to the topic we have today, which is about ongoing learning for financial professionals. Let's start with talking about why is it so crucial for, in particular, for finance professionals to be staying on top of their continuous learning compared to maybe other types of jobs?
I'll give a couple reasons, a couple answers to that. One is that learning is incremental, right? We don't eat our entire meals for the week on Sunday, right? But yet we go to school, we get our education, our BAs, our MBAs, our CPAs. And then some people think that our learning stops there, but you can't just stop there, right? Learning is incremental and it's continuous because you need to keep up, right? You need to keep up with what's happening. You need to keep up with the change. So that's the second thing. What we need to know is different than what we might have learned in school. Our CEO has a favorite saying. I think it's a Jack Welch quote, that when the speed of change externally is greater than the speed of change internally, that the end is near. And we are living in a time and in a career cycle where change is constant on the outside. And we need to match that change and that constancy of change inside to keep up. And then the third thing I would say is that learning needs to be combined with application. And so what I think is really a powerful combination is to learn something relevant to what you're doing at work. And so that you, that learning can really sink in and you can apply it and reinforce it. And that's how it really stays with you. And so learning incrementally, continuously, and applying it incrementally and continuously really helps it stick and really helps your personal growth and development.
Yeah, it's so true that, you know, there's been so much more talk about even micro learning and offering it up in smaller pieces. As you can take that learning and apply it directly, it's just so much easier to have that stick with you than all in one shot. You talked about Sunday eating all your meals for the week. And absolutely, even though sometimes I feel like I did do that on Sunday, it doesn't feel good. And you do got to pace yourself. So when you think about then for finance leaders, as they're looking at their teams and needing to cultivate this growth mindset and help keep this alive and support it, how do you think they do a good job at keeping that mindset fresh?
We actually have done some research on this, right? How do you create that growth mindset, keep that education going, and what sets leading companies apart from others? So we had a survey about a year, year and a half ago, and three things really stood out from the results of what we called our agile leaders, which were the top 20% of respondents versus everybody else. And the first thing I would say is psychological safety. The agile leaders were 33% more likely to say that they have safety to voice their opinions and suggestions without fear of negative consequences. And so what you want from your team and from your leaders is to engender that improvement. And some of the feedback, some of the qualitative feedback we got was, you know, assign a devil's advocate. So you normalize the fact that somebody is always second guessing and asking tough questions. Have post-meeting debriefs and talk about what just happened instead of quickly moving on. And really having the leaders demonstrate their desire to learn. So all of that is part of the psychological safety and showing that vulnerability. The second thing that came out was take responsible risks. And here, our data point is that agile leaders were 26% more likely to say that they were open to continual improvements. And we define that as experimentation, trial and error of new methods, and raising disruptive ideas. So for leaders and for organizational design, think about how you can have goals around ambition, not just outcome, not just what you did, but how you went to do it. There may be many ways to achieve a goal. Failure along the way just means that you might not have gotten where you wanted from that method, but you want to encourage that sense of experimentation and trial. And the third thing I'll say about agile leaders is that they were 23% more likely to say they were adequately staffed and adequately trained. And it sounds so funny, but finance has this habit. I don't know, I'm sure not for you and your team, but finance overall has this habit of trying to demonstrate fiscal restraint and fiscal responsibility. And so they often will say, we can get by without that extra person, without that extra headcount, that extra investment in systems. And really, you can't do that if you want a growth mindset. If you want people to be creative, to interact and be that partner, you have to free up their time. You have to make sure you're adequately staffed and adequately resourced to do the work in order to do the extra work and do the extra partnering and the extra tie-ins that you're to get the outcome you really want to achieve.
What do you think are the top obstacles then getting in the way of being able to foster this mindset?
Number one is structural. It's finance doing work where the main beneficiary is somebody else in finance. Informal surveys, right? Just kind of on webinars, informal quotes, about two-thirds of people are spending two-thirds of their time doing work for other people in finance, right? If you want to be a partner, and this is an FP&A audience. If you want to be a partner, you have to change that ratio. You have to spend more time doing work where you're the end person, the beneficiary is the business, is your partner. Really closely related to that is just overall busyness, right? We are busy. We are, you know, 100% committed, 120% committed, right? We have other surveys that show that throughout the year, we tend to put in about 50 hours a week, but that goes up by 20% during peak periods, right? Busyness is an obstacle to having time to think about what your growth plan is, reading, exploring, and finding those other areas. And then the last thing I would say is that it's that lack of investment in people and your infrastructure, right? If we're spending so much of our time preparing the data, right? Whatever the, you know, often you hear 70% thrown around is just preparing the data. That is going to limit the amount of time you have turning that data into insight and into action.
And you talk about that interesting balance of how much time is being spent preparing information for our own team compared to for the rest of the business. What do you think the right balance is there?
It depends, right? I sound like an economist there, but it depends. And in certain roles, what's happened is FP&A, as it's become more mature, has also become more specialized. So there are some people, especially in smaller companies, who will do the whole gamut of planning, reporting, KPIs, and ad hoc analyses. And then you have larger companies where those will actually be whole different departments. And so if you are in a partnership role, right, when I sat and I was embedded in the business, right, I was probably spending 80% of my time working with the business and for the business. There's also more FP&A roles that are more centralized, where we were pulling together the information from the decentralized units. So there we were, I would say it was probably reversed. It was probably about 20% because we were receiving all the information from the decentralized units. So it depends where you are. If I had to give an average, I would say, you know, you'd want to spend the majority of your time. If you're business focused, business partner is your main client, you want to spend the majority of your time supporting your main client.
And so when we think about learning for finance professionals, I think often our minds go to some of the obvious financial topics. But how do you think about the cross-functional learning and how important is that for finance professionals?
So I think the cross-functional learning is where the growth happens and it's where the business understanding happens, right? When I look back on my own career, the best projects have always been cross-functional because it pulls you out of your day-to-day and you get to meet new people and do other things. I could tell you, this was one of the main recommendations that came out of a roundtable that we had at our conference, right? The learning that happens on a technology infrastructure project, right? You are interacting with IT and you're learning about new technologies and how to implement and data manage, right? That's great. A new product rollout and you're really involved with marketing and you understand the supply chain, the value chain, how something is created, the economics of how we create value. And I'll tell you, one of the main complaints I hear from CFOs is that their finance people don't know how they make money. They know their business, they know their niche. But if you really want to be good at FP&A, if you really want to be a CFO, you have to know how you make money, where you're losing money, and how to convey your insights and action items to your partners.
So when you think then about the learning, because there's a cost that comes with learning, both in the time and the cost of the courses, potentially if there's fees attached, how do you suggest that teams go about measuring that ROI of that learning to help foster that how much continuous learning should be happening?
That's such a CFO question. Right? Show me the ROI. And I'll be honest, I don't have a good answer for that, right? Because you know the cost. You can measure what a class costs or sending somebody to conference or a certification, but you don't know what the cost is of being on a exploratory project. And the benefits are not directly measurable. You can't draw a one-to-one correspondence between them. So it's hard to get that. What I would say is that the ROI is generally slow moving. And there's a couple things you could look for. You could look for the trajectory of the people who are on those projects and on the teams. Are they moving ahead of their peers at a faster rate? You can look at satisfaction scores. Are the people who are getting, are the beneficiaries who are getting that training, are they responding to surveys as saying that they're more engaged? Higher satisfaction? Do you retain them longer and have lower turnover? And you can also measure your partners. Are your partners satisfied with how well finance is serving their needs?
I totally agree with those ones. And you're right. It gets hard to track, but I do believe you can measure. There's there's an opportunity cost of not doing it as well, I think. If finance is remaining siloed and others aren't getting the value and wanting to bring finance to the table, you're missing that chance to be aligning with the rest of the org and collaborating. And so there's definitely a cost to the business of not getting this right, that I also, as I sometimes think about the other side of what if we don't invest in this and we fall behind and we get more siloed. And like you talked about, attrition is higher, people aren't feeling as much job satisfaction. So I definitely think there is that payback, but it can be a little bit gray zone trying to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Why do you think it's important for finance professionals to keep up things, for instance, like Excel, and maybe you've got other types of skill sets for FP&A professionals in particular?
Have you seen the cartoon that's been going around where there's an image of all of these complicated, sophisticated systems, right? It's your EPM and your CPM and your CRM and your data warehouse and your data lake and your lake house, right? Or however you want to call it. And then they're all kind of sitting perched and held up by Excel, right? Right. And the punchline is Excel holds up the world. Excel is ubiquitous, right? 750 million user installs around the world, can't be wrong. And at that point, Excel itself becomes a language, and it's everybody in finance speaks it. Everybody uses it. And because of that, it has utility, ubiquity for every person in every job. It is great at what it does, especially in unscripted moments in ad hoc analyses. But also, Excel by itself is not static. It has been expanding its functionality in recent years, right? It has vastly improved its data connectivity through its own version. They don't call it ETLs, but it is an extract, transform, and load function, so it can connect into databases. The use of Power BI, Power Query has really expanded it. The interoperability and the APIs with other tools really has made it not a relic, but if anything, more integrated, more useful, and more applicable throughout the world. And when we ask our members, right, we put together sample job descriptions, we do job task analyses in order to find out what is really relevant. We hear every year, Excel, you know, medium, advanced Excel is what they're looking for. Basic Excel is assumed, but people are always looking for that skill because it just becomes, it remains core to what we do.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Basic Excel is assumed, but people are always looking for that skill because it just becomes, it remains core to what we do.
Let's talk a bit now about how finance leaders can go about making continuous learning actually happen. What do you think are some best practices that finance leaders can put in place to make sure that that learning is ongoing?
There's certain things that organizations can do to build supporting communities for education. So when somebody takes a class, don't have them take it alone. Take it either with a partner, share back the learnings, make it a communal experience, and applaud and publicly recognize people who are doing that, right? We recognize people who are doing great work. We value the work. Recognize people who are advancing their own education and promote that. There's also some things that I've seen, especially around the communities, that are a little bit more sophisticated, but organizations that I would call best in class are really creating learning experiences that recognize that some people are going to be at the leading edge and some people are going to be moving at kind of a normal pace. And so they've found ways for the leading edge people to work with each other and network with each other. One example, one company called it their purple people, where they put them through this cohort through a training. And they were finance people that they were going to teach tech skills to. So that was the purple, right? Red and blue make purple. Finance and tech skills make purple people. And so they gave them certain projects. They had internal hackathons where they would give a problem and they'd say, all right, everybody, give us your solution. So everybody in the company starts who's in this program starts working on the problem, and they're thinking about it, and they're talking to each other, and they submit, and something is chosen as the best. And then everybody learns from what is the best opportunity. Another company, another very large company, they called it their digital leads, and they had they had different projects around the company, and then they had their own internal conference, and people presented what their projects were and what they learned. And everybody else in the room could ask questions. What tool did you use? How did you do it? And really kind of create those internal networks of the leading edge people, self-selected, right? People who had the time, who could go through it and had the inclination. But then all those people go back to their teams and they infuse their teams with what they learned and how they did it and how much more efficient they are. And in that way, you build a community and a culture of that growth and development.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about programs like that, because I've seen things like that as well. And what they do is, as people realize, hey, if you're interested in this, you're showing that you've got that motivation to be part of it. As people participated and the readback came, others wanted to be part of it too. And these things do start to have this allure to them of, hey, if I do well, I start to show mastery here, I might be able to participate in this. And you're right. There's all these intangible benefits that come out of those folks who participated. The network they've got within the business gets stronger. And the next time they may have a real problem on their hands, who do I call? Where do I go? How do I break down this barrier? They become more effective at that because they've created these networks that they may not have had otherwise and not gotten the opportunity in the day-to-day. So I definitely can see the value of those. As finance professionals think about selecting their education resources and deciding what courses are going to be most relevant and be worth my time, or I'm going to get real benefit out of them, what advice would you give to them?
The good news is that there are a lot of resources to choose from. The bad news is the exact same thing, right? There's, you know, you could pay for it, you could get it for free, you can join communities and find your own. So you could spend a lot of time just in that effort of finding out what to do. So my sense is you want to find a reputable source, right? I'm a little bit biased. We happen to think that we are that reputable source and that clearinghouse, and whether it's putting, you know, culling the finance community for who's a good speaker and what's happening and keeping our pulse on. But we recognize that there are other sources as well, but we happen to think that we've got some of the best stuff out there. You also want to think about building towards something. Right? You could take a scattershot approach and take lots of different courses on lots of different areas, but are you building towards a degree, towards a certification, towards a skill in a different area? So you want to think, you want to be strategic, really, in how you choose what you want to choose. And then you also want to have a balance of hard skills and soft skills, right? The hard skills, the technical skills, whether that's finance technical and, you know, maybe it's some sort of fancy equations and DCFs or whatever it is, or technology skills that would fit in the hard skill category, whether it's a certain, you know, whether it's Venna or a tool or something else that you want to use. And then you also want to have soft skills. And a lot of the buzz right now, since the AI is coming, it's here, it's expanding at such a fast pace, there really isn't an emphasis on soft skills. And how do you be more human, right? How do you make human your superpower in an AI-powered world? And I'll give you a quick analogy, because we had this great speaker at conference who laid this out. He said, imagine a world where there are two drinks, only two drinks, right? You could either drink coffee or you could drink tea, and they're competitive and they're equal substitute. The speaker was an economist, as you could tell. He says, what happens if suddenly coffee becomes free? Well, we start drinking it all the time. We start finding other uses for it. We start watering our plants with coffee, our plants get a little bit wired, right? We start washing our car, whatever it is. We start using coffee everywhere. But what happens to tea? The price of tea craters because it's trying to compete with the coffee, but you can't really compete with free. His point was that what AI does is it's giving compute power and it's making it ubiquitous. It's lowering the price point, and we're finding all kinds of new uses for it all throughout the business. And so his point was, don't try to out-compute AI. It just won't work. Don't be a bad robot. Don't be a bad computer. Be a good human. And that means critical thinking skills, communication skills, seeing bigger picture and seeing what's outside of the same box, the data warehouse that the AI is trained on. Be a good human. Focus on those human skills and those soft skills in addition to the hard skills that we're trying to pick up.
I love that advice, and especially right now. I'm curious then, with what you see, what are currently some of the most common skill sets or courses that finance professionals are taking, the top three, let's say?
So speaking to our own book of business, we have a course on critical thinking, right? How do you challenge the data? How do you compare and judge the information that's coming into you? Second, you know, I mentioned that we have our certification. We also have smaller badges. And so we have a badge on analytics, digital analytics. And so that is also very popular. And then our third one that most popular is business partnership. How do you become a business partner? Establish rapport, communicate well, be heard, and challenge effectively to your business partners.
You've got the formal learning, the, you know, the classrooms, the on-the-job learning. I think financial professionals also have to stay on top of what are the latest industry trends. Do you have any advice for how to do that?
And this is always what's hard, is you have to have your head down and your head up at the same time, right? Have to be head down. You've got to look at the work that's in front of you and be good at your day job, because that's how we all get paid and that's how we put food on the table. And at the same time, you have to have your head up and you have to look around and see what else is going on. And it's really hard to do that by yourself. That's where outside organizations like AFP can help you by creating and curating content for you and for what you do. You know, I mentioned our conference. 130 educational sessions is a huge smorgasbord from which you can decide what it is that you need, what's most useful for you or for your team. And then we also, in other conferences, we have a communication-focused virtual event at the end of August, right? In March of 25, we have an FP&A-only event that is going to be just focus on the latest FP&A topics. So having some help in creating, curating, and bringing to you the most relevant topics can help you with that head up, look around, connection to your peers, and real world, real practitioner-based focus on what really is impactful.
And you touch on the conferences and that networking. How important do you think that is in terms of contributing to learning for finance professionals?
10 out of 10 on level of importance, right? Again, things are happening so fast. The change of pace is happening so fast. And there are so many voices. And some voices are trying to sell you certain things. And some voices are trying to know what they know, right? And so you need to meet different people at different parts of the spectrum. When we come to conference, we call it the big tent, because under one roof, and this is really extends to all of AFP, we are the meeting place for companies and individuals, for consultants and for software vendors. And each of them have a role to play, and each of them have something to teach and something to learn. And no one person or one source is going to give you all that you need. But if you think about that, who is under my tent? Who am I interacting with that I can learn from? And get that multiple point of view input. That's really what it takes to know what's happening and to kind of maintain a broad view and apply it to you and your work and your career.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's something, it's easy to not find the time to do it because I'm busy and I just have other things to get done. And yet it can be such an efficient way when you've got that broader network, you start to hear what others are doing. You can check it with the things you're doing. You can bounce ideas off each other. You can call them up when you're trying to work through a problem and learn from other people's experiences. So I totally agree. It's something we have to be very conscious about making the time to do it. I think something else when I reflect, you know, on my own learning, at least, is it hasn't been just a straight line of I'm going to spend this much time learning ongoing. Obviously, we have minimum requirements. We've got some requirements to hold our designations, but the learnings can be really high in some years and a little bit lesser in others. And I think some of that has to do with where you are on your journey in your career and in life as well. How do you see the journey going you know, as people make their way through their career. Do you see big changes as it goes?
I think, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like sometimes what you learn and when you learn has to do with your busyness, your availability, right? Work projects, personal projects, and you try and fit it in when you can. But if I step back and think about your question from a career standpoint and look at and extend out that view of the horizon, what we found is when you're early in your career, what's really helpful is to get a lot of breath. I personally benefited from being part of a rotational program. Lots of people early in their career move around, right? You don't know what you don't know. And so getting that breadth of topics and understanding the finance field, the business landscape, industries, that breadth is really important at the early part of your career. And then when you're a certain number of years in, then it's really good to focus and gain expertise in an area, right? Maybe whether it's FP&A or even within that, right? Certain areas, you want to develop that expertise. And then again, as you hopefully get promoted and you're moving up in your career and you have a larger span of control, you tend to have less touch on the day-to-day work and you're more working through influence and working through other people. And there, you again want to think broader. You want to think about those other areas, technologies, broader influences that you could bring not only to yourself, but to your group. So people used to argue whether it was better to be a mile wide or a mile deep. I think there's really an hourglass view in here where breadth in the early part of your career as you're accelerating your learning, more focus as you enter a later stage, and then as you become more senior and broaden your span of control, you want to go back to breadth, influence, and really be able to touch other parts of the environment and bring that back to your team.
I love that hourglass picture because you're absolutely right. It changes as it goes, and that's okay. That's the way it should be. Now, for our listeners, if they were thinking, okay, well, what are two practical things I could do today to start enhancing my continuous learning? What would that be?
One, carve out time. Carve out time to make a plan of what you're going to do and carve out time to actually do it. And then the second thing I would say is really work with your boss, with your team. What we found is the trend in recent years is companies are investing more in their teams. And there are a couple different dimensions or vectors in which companies can help their individuals. And people should go about this because more and more, and we have the longitudinal study that shows people are getting a combination of time, money, planning resources, and cultural support. And you should look for some elements of all of those from your company. Are they giving you the time and saying, all right, well, take a week out of the office, don't come in and take this class? Are they giving you the money and saying, we'll support this course, this certification, this training, and maybe they give the money and you do it on your own time? There's a little bit of negotiation there, but that's the leverage point to negotiate this with your company. And ask about that gap analysis, right? It's very easy for a company to say, you know, Melissa, you're in this job, you're in this role, we want you to be great and give you training for that role. Step out from there and help you to create a learning plan. Where is the company going? What is the gap analysis to where the company is going into your next job? And get that extra view of what you should be learning. Don't hold it all on your own shoulders.
It's definitely a collaboration in partnership of the individual helping to drive and know where they want to go, but then also the employer helping to make sure we're supporting that. And on that point, when I think about for CFOs or finance leaders who are looking for ways to enhance continuous learning, what advice would you give to them?
Model it. You really have to live what you're saying, because otherwise, you don't want people to think it's just lip service. If the leader demonstrates that they are doing it, it gives everybody else permission to do the same. So learn it, promote it, publicly talk about the successes of your team when they do learn something.
Brian, excellent advice. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, whenever we do have guests on the show, we have two rapid fire questions for them. So are you ready?
All right, I'm ready.
All right. What is your go-to strategy for staying productive during the workday?
jokingly, I'd say caffeine, but maybe that's not a joke. I need movement, right? So during the day, whether it's taking the dog for a walk, I've often thought that my dog should be on the company payroll, and just getting outside. I work from home, but getting outside at lunch, it makes a big deal for me.
That's definitely become much more important, especially now as people are working at home, as we have to be more conscious about that for sure. And the second question is, what helps you to turn a bad day around?
You know, working from home, I have the ability to see my family, to see interactions coming in and around the house. So at some point when I get frustrated, I can often go downstairs and see my wife, see my kids, and just kind of remember that it's work is important, but it's not the only thing that's out there.
Brian, thanks again for joining me today. Great advice. And it's clear that you're passionate about this topic. So really appreciate you joining me and giving us your time to share.
Melissa, thanks for the invitation. And it's been a pleasure talking to you about this.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. Looking for more great CFO show content? Sign up for our free newsletter. Each week, you'll get a roundup of exclusive content to help you grow and drive strategic transformation. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.